Welcome to the Irish Photography Podcast. Take control of your camera and develop the skills necessary to improve and master your photography. Join me, Dermot O'Donovan, John Myler and Darren J. Spoonley as they cut through the sometimes confusing jargon of photography to help you find your own style and decide what's best for you. A mix of educational, inspirational, honest and sometimes controversial content delivered in a unique, fun way from three of Ireland's talented photographers. Let's go! Hello guys and welcome to the Irish Photography Podcast. We're here with another special guest. I hope you all really enjoyed our last one, Michael O'Sullivan, but today we have a super duper landscape photographer, goes by the name Bernard Geraghty. Hello Bernard, how are you?
Hi guys, how are you getting on?
How are you, Bernard? How are you?
Yeah.
And I'm always here with my co-host, John Myler from Shannon. How are you, John? You keep well?
How's going, Dermot? Bernard, nice to catch up with you.
John, we need to meet up and have a little shoot.
Yeah, we do badly.
Talking too much and not doing enough.
I know.
What's going on, guys?
So Bernard, welcome along to the podcast. It's fantastic to have you here. We hope to have a great interview with you. Hopefully you'll entertain us for at least half an hour. Now, I will say one thing. We are missing one of our co-hosts, Darren Spoonley. Unfortunately, he is away on business, so we're going to have to fly the ship without him. Don't cry too much now, guys. But
that's the only reason I agreed to it, you know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, Bernard, tell me more about you. Who is Bernard Geraghty? What do you do and where do you come from?
I am obviously Bernard Geraghty and I am a landscape photographer. Some like to call me a professional landscape photographer, but I do not see it that way. I just see myself as a landscape photographer who happens to have it, you know, it's my business. It's my full-time profession. I come from Kildare, the home of photography and big mountains. So, Kildare and photography doesn't go too well in terms of landscapes, but lucky enough, I'm only down the road from Wicklow and stuff, you know, and it's pretty much where my journey started, from shooting little streams in the back end of Wicklow to shooting landscapes all over the world.
So you don't be going up around the Curra there and up around Donnelly's Hollow and all those places, no? Braveheart Hill?
Not really, no. There's been once or twice where I kind of headed up, but to be honest, it just doesn't do it for me, you know?
No.
It's nice, you know, it's nice on the foggy mornings and stuff like that. And you know, I've done the odd kind of morning before it was kind of my profession, heading up and just shooting. But no, like, maybe I've never got in the right light or what I wanted, but I've just never really got anything I wanted, and I just feel most comfortable just shooting in the mountains and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, though it's very plain and very plain, the Curra. There's no impact shot there to be had, really.
Nah. Still a lovely place all the same.
Ah, it's stunning. Absolutely.
So, Bernard, what me and I'd say a lot of people would love to know, what makes you different from any other landscape photographer? What makes you tick? What makes you go?
In terms of like how the whole thing started was just when I actually first got into photography, it was actually just on advice from, believe it or not, my doctor. I had went to talk to him, just, you know, gone through a bit of a tough time. I hadn't really said anything to friends or family, but I knew something wasn't right within me. So I had just made an appointment and I went to talk to him, told him how I was feeling, told him, you know what, just something doesn't feel right at the moment. I don't feel myself, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, for a guy who loves being outside, like, constantly, I spent about 2 years really not being outside, kind of locking myself away. And I just went and I spoke to him, and he just kind of spoke back and asked about different feelings and stuff. And, you know, he had kind of, you know, mentioned, you know, counselling and stuff like that. You know, how would I feel, and that down the line maybe I'm, you know, even going on medication. But it was definitely not something I wanted to do, because I just felt that there was another way around actually starting to feel myself again. So he's a real hobbyist photographer himself. And he had just asked, had I any interest in outdoors? And I had told him, listen, I love being out and I love being about, and I used to climb mountains all the time. And he had asked if I'd ever brought a camera up the mountains, and I'd be like, no, never really entered my mind. So this was in September 2015. In October 2015, I had actually taken his advice, and I went and bought a camera. It was a Fuji XM1, a little mirrorless camera, if I'm not mistaken, and literally just started from there. I suppose I'd be self-taught. I'd never done any workshops myself, even though it's funny because like running them now. To be honest, that was the start of the bug, and from kind of there till now, I really don't have any kind of moment that, you know, the click that came to say, you know, I don't know how I improved. I don't know how I even decided to set up the business. It literally just feels like it happened overnight.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of a blur. There's nothing that kind of motivated me. It did help me. The camera helped me get out and about again. Like, I do remember, when I first got into photography, I had my very first photography friend was a guy, John Egan, absolute gas man, really good friend. And we used to go on right little adventures together. And at the time, thinking I knew everything, as kind of I think we do when we start photography. You know,
oh yeah.
When people start photography, I think it's when we least accept constructive criticism.
Yeah.
Would you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it took me about 6 months to leave college to understand that I know feck all about photography.
Like, and we definitely will never ever know like everything. Like, yeah. That's definitely not going to happen. But we still all make mistakes and all that kind of stuff. But it was like, it was kind of after actually being around John, and he knew a little bit more than me. It was him that introduced me to like Snapseed and like Lightroom, and I was like, what? You know? This is literally only 3 years ago, which is crazy. But literally that's exactly how it was. So from
that's brilliant.
From then to now, I really don't know how it actually evolved, you know, and how the ideas came. One thing I'll never forget is actually when realizing that there was such thing as long exposures, I actually set my little camera up one time on like a GorillaPod, and I ran the kitchen tap, and like I done it. My very first long exposure was like a 5 second exposure of the water coming out of the kitchen tap, you know. And then it was.
But come here.
Yeah.
So, you tell us about these workshops, right? And that you've never done one and all this. But one thing I'd love to know is, what's the funniest thing that's ever happened to you on a workshop?
Oh.
Or what you've experienced or what you've seen.
So.
And you can name drop all you want.
I won't name drop. We will mention the little Milo incident in a minute. But I think that might have been overtaken just tonight. So obviously, like now I'm running the workshop at the moment on the Isle of Skye. So just sitting in the little kitchenette here. And literally half an hour ago, I went up to the shop just to grab a few bits to make a sandwich and stuff back here. And happened to be just, I said I'd get myself a beer. You know, I wouldn't drink a whole lot, but I said, you know what, nice beer, chill beer. And edit some photos later on. And we happened to be waiting in the queue for about 10 minutes, and we were actually next in line, but the guy behind the counter insisted on talking and talking and talking and talking to obviously what was a local, because he was talking about his father and stuff like that. So everyone was kind of getting very restless behind us, and then up came our turn, so we were saying nothing, and we eventually got served. So lastly, he takes out my bottle of beer and goes to scan it and says, oops, sorry, but the deadline has passed. Purchase beer.
Oh, and I said, no way.
Right? So here's the funny part, right? Now, as I say, I'm not a big drinker, but I was just looking forward to my nice beer, right? So I says, what's the deadline? You know, and he goes, 10 o'clock. I says,
wow.
It's 1 minute past 10.
And you were standing there for how long?
So he's like, sorry, there's nothing I can do. I was like, you've literally just spent the last 10 minutes like talking, like blatantly talking to some guy who had only got a couple of items, and like if you had have finished on time, I would have got my beer 5 minutes before the deadline.
Yeah.
No, and the guy behind me was laughing at it as well. Like it was just like he was just he couldn't believe it, you know. Brilliant.
Did you get the beer?
No.
He didn't even give it to you?
There was about 6 or 7 other staff on the floor, like putting out stock and all that kind of stuff. And there was about 15 people in the queue and only one serving.
Disaster.
Wow. Yeah, that's my little story for tonight, but...
Now you have to hit the water instead.
Ah,
wow.
It was mad, but listen, it was funny, you know, like, it's no point crying over spilled milk, like, but, you know, it was funny, you know, just being 1 minute, like, you know, it literally
yeah.
1 minute and that was it. He wasn't going to serve me the beer. But if we have time for another little funny story.
In a few minutes, we'll touch base on a few other things now before we get to our story.
I'm interested to hear this other funny story.
I have a funny feeling.
I may be involved. You, Dad, yeah. That wouldn't surprise me whatsoever. Yeah.
Now, Bernard, you mentioned there you're a nihilist guy at the moment, and it's great the fact that we can you've came on and you're willing to give us an interview from nihilist guy. Take us through very quickly, if you can, what your typical tour will engage in Isle of Skye. What will you see? What will you do?
So, generally, we fly into Glasgow. It's 4 days long. We fly in on a Thursday. Morning, early morning. So generally, we kind of land in Glasgow about 8:30, and we don't fly home till like 10 p.m. on the Sunday night. So it generally gives us 3 nights, but it gives us more or less 4 full days of shooting. Reason we fly into Glasgow, it's a long drive from Glasgow to Skye, it's 5 hours, but we do have the benefit of driving through Glencoe, which, if anyone's not really familiar with Glencoe, it's kind of like, I suppose, the Gap of Dunloe on steroids, you know. It's,
yeah, I believe it's stunning.
Yeah, it's insane, you know.
I've been there with yourself, Bernard. It is absolutely fantastic, you know. So I would encourage anyone to go to Glencoe if you can. It's cold, but it's beautiful.
It's amazing, you know. And now today we did stop at the famous Buchel Ateave Moor waterfall in Glen Ateave, and it was beautiful conditions. We literally stood for an hour in the rain. But there was a little bit of passing cloud and clear spells, and there was a bit of light touching mountains here, there and everywhere. It was raining heavy enough, and the group kind of said, listen, will we just call it a day? And I had said, listen, we'll just give it 15 more minutes just to see. I suppose nearly on the 15 minute mark, this little gap came and we managed to get some beautiful light on the mountain for about 15 minutes, which was great and was definitely worth the stay. Unfortunately, the weather did close in for the rest, so we literally just... We actually, rather than shoot anywhere else in Glencoe, we just came straight up the sky, and we shot a bit of a sunset this evening there at, I hope I pronounced this right, Schleggen. Schleggen.
Spell it there, Bernard.
No. and yeah, we just landed in our accommodation, so the morning looks like it's going to be a bit of a washout, but clears early in the morning, so we're hitting the ferry pools. Yeah, at 8 a.m. in the morning, so hopefully it's going to be better conditions than when you came on a trip with me.
I've unfinished business from there, and I will be probably returning soon enough. Myself, John and Darren are trying to maybe set up a trip for the three of us. You can tag along if you want to, buddy. We get the four of us going over, maybe do a podcast over or something, you know?
Yeah, definitely, 100%.
But tell us more about the fairy pools.
Ah, where to start? The fairy pools in Glenbrit. Absolutely unbelievable. It's a bit of a trek. It's a good walk, kind of a down and up walk, along a well trail path, I suppose. And once you kind of get down within half an hour of walking, you start to reach all these waterfalls, basically for the next kind of 500 meters, you know, possibly even a kilometer. Just little absolutely crystal clear water, you can see straight through. It's just unbelievable. And it's just little waterfalls and pools all the way up to the very last, kind of the main fairy pool, I suppose. And it's kind of one that a lot of people don't go to in terms of your general tourists. It's kind of only photographers that go beyond that, up to that place. And it's such a special place, like, and it's one of mood. We don't want to go up there with kind of clear skies. We want cloud.
You want moody atmosphere.
Passing showers, You know, we want pretty much everything except clear skies.
Sounds like a foggy morning there. Sounds like the right job too.
Depending,
because we kind of have this mountain in the, you know, we have two kind of one shot. One's the waterfalls in front and a lovely Toblerone shaped mountain in the front. It was in the background. Sometimes you can get the fog around the other mountains and not the main one, so it actually makes it pop a little bit more. But in general, we just want mood. That's all we want, a bit of clarity in the clouds.
And no rain.
Oh, there's rain and there's rain that we had.
Oh, man, it's bad.
But, so that's pretty much the ferry pools, and it's one where kind of, especially if you have kind of beginners on trips, it's one where they will make sure that they never, ever, ever, ever forget a polarizer ever again.
Yeah, definitely.
It's kind of the most important part of the trip where they really, really appreciate the polarizer. Because I try to put a lot of emphasis on that, because not only does it add vibrance, but obviously it cuts the glare of any type of water, you know.
Very good. I have a question there for you for Skye there, Bernard. If you were to pick, now, the fairy pools could be the answer here, but if you were to pick one place in Skye that's your favourite spot to go photograph, which is it and why?
It has to be the...
It's like asking him to pick his favourite child, is it?
Has to be the Old Man of Stour. Has to be. Yeah. It's just insane. And, it's a tough kind of 45-minute hike. And that's kind of, you're talking for a very fit person, you're talking half an hour, but very, steep. And kind of, you know, if you're not so fit, it could take you an hour and 15 minutes. Generally, I kind of think an average, my groups will get up between 45 minutes and an hour. But it's when you get up there, again, a place of absolute amazing mood.
And do you decide to pick a particular time of day to go to that?
Sunrise.
Is that sunrise, yeah?
Yeah, because if you don't go up for sunrise, generally, I like to be up there at least an hour before. You know, we have to judge obviously the fitness of the clients and stuff because everyone's different. So for instance, tomorrow morning is a complete washout, unfortunately. There's no hope for sunrise, and it's dangerous words to say that, but literally the forecast is horrible. Everyone's actually hit the bed nice and early tonight, so they do get a nice bit of a lie in. We don't leave here late in the morning, but Saturday morning now looks pretty decent. So although sunrise is at 10 to 7, we actually leave here and it's only 15 minutes away of a drive till we start the hike. We actually do leave at 4:30.
Very good. And how many people would be on your, how many attendees go on your workshops in general? Do you have a maximum or a minimum or?
So yeah, in Ireland, it could be 5 to 6, and you know, now that's generally what it is. It is mostly 5, but you do have the odd 6 person. And then abroad, the Isle of Skye, it could take 5, depending on accommodation. The transport's no problem because we always get a 9-seater.
Very good.
Particular trip, we 4. 4 is a very comfortable group. You know, we have kind of 3 out of 4 that you know, would not need a lot of help, but they really appreciate a lot of help. Composition.
A little bit of guidance, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So 4, you know, if I had a very experienced group, which I have in the past, well, you know, then you can easily bring 5 and be very, very comfortable, you know.
Before I forget, because Darren will kill us, Darren had a question for you, okay? What's the most essential piece of equipment that workshop attendees normally forget? So what's your advice, and what do they normally forget?
Believe it or not, some forget when the trip is.
No, my God, no way. Yeah, no way.
That's a central reminder.
Well, I have a guy coming, next month. I do send out my kind of emails about a month and a half before the trip, just about remaining balances and questions and flight information, all that kind of stuff, to make sure that we're all on the same wavelength. And he had asked me what dates are we going again, you know? So, but you see, people book so far in advance. I personally like to kind of have trips sold out kind of 8-9 a year in advance, you know, 8-9 months, even a year in advance. So people do forget. But in terms of actually equipment, I've had everything from memory cards. I always I'm so critical of tripods. Like, you know, tripods are so important. And my kind of motto is, you know, we do see a lot of people coming with kind of light tripods, but like very heavy cameras, and they really kind of see the disadvantages of having these. The camera's too heavy for the ball head. The plate doesn't tighten enough. It loosens very easy, and but topple over. Which I will touch on a point example in a minute of a bad tripod. But I always say, you know, you wouldn't put your mansion on the foundations of a bungalow. You know.
Yeah, yeah, that's a very good point.
You know, if you're going to spend 4,000 euros on a camera and lens or whatever, there's no point in having like a 150 euro tripod because it's light.
Yeah,
yeah.
And, oh, but I'm hiking and it's too heavy. Well, then you shouldn't, you know, you should buy a lighter camera maybe, you know, and you need to find that combination that works.
We're just going to take a quick break there from a word from our sponsors. Okay, guys.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hainel Industries. Hainel Industries is one of the leading manufacturers of power products for camcorders and digital cameras. Having celebrated over 50 years in business, Hainel have an excellent reputation in research and development and a well-known history of quality products and excellent design.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Irish Photography Podcast. We still have Bernard here and from the Eyeless Guy, and I'm still with John as well. Bernard, you're telling a little story there before we went on break about the tripods and having a massive camera like a 5D Mark III or whatever and having a little tripod holding it up. And like you alluded to before the break, was you wouldn't have a mention on the foundation of a little house. And you're very true, because when we were in Isle of Skye, was it last year or the year before, Bernard? I can't remember.
I think it was the start of 2017, wasn't it?
It's March 2017. I think you're right. We had a certain person, certain human being on the trip. His name is Milo.
Milo.
For our listeners, Milo Van Beck is a very, very competent, very good photographer in every aspect. He's very good at wildlife, sports, and so on and so forth. But he is a very interesting character, very good sense of humor. And he will keep you entertained for months on end. Now, Milo decided to bring a Canon 5D Mark III with a 16-35 2.8 lens. Am I correct?
As well, yeah.
Yeah, and do you want to say, I let you tell the story, Bernard. What happened after that? What did he have underneath that camera?
I don't know. I literally...
Okay, I'll tell you, because I think I have an eidetic memory. He had a Manfrotto B-Free tripod. It's one of the cheaper, like 120 euro job tripods. Now, it's Manfrotto, we understand that, but it was the skinniest tripod that you will ever see in your life.
Yeah, they're great tripods, but just not for a 5D Mark III and a 16-35 2.8.
With filters on it.
With filters, yeah. And a wind. So,
yeah.
I actually have a client here with a B3, the new carbon one, with an A7R2 on it, and it's fine. It's okay, you know, not ideal, but okay. But definitely better than a 5D3. But yeah, listen, some people who come in workshops are lucky enough to have a Milo included in the package. But we were actually at the fairy pools last year, March last year, and everyone was kind of scattered along up the fairy pools. I think there was five on that trip, wasn't there? Plus myself.
Yeah, me, you, Kevin.
Brian. Ian and Milo.
Ian. Yeah, so six, is it?
Yeah, so six including me. And we were at the fairy pools, and I was up helping somebody. I can't even remember who it was, but I think it was Brian. I was probably about 100 metres or so away. But I think it was Brian. I had warned Milo about the tripod, you know, like, listen, it's just too light and stuff like that, you know. And, you know, Milo being Milo, you know, full of beans, like, it'll be grand, it'll be grand. And there was a bit of a gale blowing that day, and it happened to be blowing to our backs. I just remember Brian running up. I was like, Bernard, like, Milo's camera's gone. I was like, what? And he's like, Milo's camera is just gone. I was like, what? So I ran down, and Milo was like, you know, he was sick. Like, he was sick. It turns out he had the camera set up, shooting away, not a bother. He turned to get something out of his bag, and the wind caught the tripod and pushed it down. How high was that cliff? Was it 30, 40 feet?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, easily about 30 feet, yeah.
Straight down. So, kind of when we got over, kind of shocked that it actually happened, because, like, at the time, like, you're talking 5,000 euro worth of gear at least, you know, and he had filters on it as well. The first thought to come into my head was get down. And get it, you know, and see, because, you know, it's fresh water, you never know, it mightn't have landed in the water, the lens might have took the impact, and, you know, the camera might be okay. So I can't even remember how, but geez, I managed to get down. Milo insisted not going down, and just leave it, and I just thought, you know what, not just go down. And I suppose it was kind of where the hiking experience came in and stuff like that, and the climbing experience is just get down and try to get it. So I managed after a few minutes to climb down the cliff. And I got down, and the camera was, like, submerged under the water. The lens had broken off and obviously had flowed downstream. It was still attached to the tripod, so I took it out. And, took the memory card out straight away. The camera was in bits, took the battery out anyway. But took the memory card out, gave it a wipe, put it in my pocket. I think, was it halfway through the trip or near enough the end of the trip?
That was after the second day.
Yeah, so, like, we had a good bit of shooting done. He didn't have his images backed up from previous days. So, yeah, the camera was wrecked. Really was wrecked. The lens was gone. So we had no hope, really. But kind of we went home anyway. And actually, do you know what? I couldn't get back up the cliff. It was, like, horrendous. We literally had to create, like, a human rope. I think Dermot lay down, hanging over the edge, pulling me up. But the lads were, like, sitting on his legs, you know. So we managed to get up, get sorted anyway. But listen, Milo was devastated, and Dermot actually had given him a loan of a Sony A7S.
Yeah, I had a spare camera, so.
For the rest of the trip, you know, which he was obviously delighted with, you know. But you know yourself, it's not your own camera.
Mm.
So I wouldn't say it ruined his trip, but, you know.
He must have been gutted.
Oh, listen, gutted is not the word. Now, luckily, he did have it insured, but we got back to the house anyway, and it literally just dawned on me. I was like, oh, I actually have the memory card. Let's see if it works. Put the memory card into one of the cameras, and lo and behold, his images and all were still there. So he might have lost his camera, but the whole trip wasn't a complete waste. He managed to actually keep it there, which was, you know, a good news story. And, you know, it kind of made me glad to have went down. You know, it was just that little reward. At least he got to keep the shots that he'd already taken.
Exactly.
And he's come back to Sky. He came back to Sky with me this year as well. So I suppose he had unfinished business with it. And actually, we got great weather when he was here. So,
and did he come back with the same kind of tripod?
Oh, Milo has the best of the best at the moment. I think he has a big gitzo. I could be wrong, but, like, he has got
big strong
now. He has let himself down by getting a pistol grip. But anyways, we'll leave that for another day. A bit pistol grip head, but no, he has. He's got a very, very sturdy tripod, and I do try.
Good.
I suppose it's hard when you have clients, because my kind of version of a sturdy tripod could be very different to theirs, you know. My kind of version of filters could be different to theirs. Like, you do get the people, and they might spend 30 quid on Amazon filters and stuff like that, but they're grand, but they don't really do the job. And I do try to emphasize, listen, if you have any questions regarding any gear, just ask me. And I do feel people are starting to get used to now, you know.
That kind of brings me on to a question I was going to ask you there, Bernard. Is there any, I see on some workshops, the attendees are told they have to bring filters, or they have to bring such and such, they have to have a polarizer. Are people go on your workshops, do they have to bring anything particular with them? Obviously, bar their camera and their tripod.
Yeah, and that's actually an amazing question. You want people to bring the best gear. you know, like, you know, not even the best gear, but you want to have the good filters and the good tripods and all that kind of stuff. But like, how do you tell somebody that might be coming with a camera worth, you know, 400, 500, 600 euros that they have to spend almost that on another tripod and, you know, filters, you know? So actually what I do have, I have spare tripods, you know, good sturdy tripods. I've two in particular. I have a Manfrotto 190 Go aluminium with a nice medium-sized ball head, and I have an 055 aluminium tree section with a three-way head. So they're relatively, like, they're reasonable priced tripods. And, you know, although I wouldn't recommend it for someone that's going to hike a big mountain, you know, like, most of my kind of clientele is, like, you know, they're not going to hike mountains every day anyway. You know, so like, it's okay to recommend there, you know, because it's going to secure their camera. So, and then same with filters. Like, I do have a woman on the trip at the moment, and she thought she had a polarizer, but it wasn't. She does have a polarizer, but it doesn't actually fit her lens. But again, I have some spare format high tech filters there, so I was able to give her my filter holder and polarizer, and she has her own grads. So, like, also what it does is, you know what, before they invest in this gear, at least they can come and see how it actually works.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So they can go off and, like, listen, as you know, like, I'm an ambassador for Format High Tech Filters, which I'm absolutely, it's an honor to be. And, you know, it's great because I'm able to offer people a discount code. And, you know, it when people see,
Bernard, will you tell people your discount code there, so hopefully they'll get a nice bit of a discount there. What is it?
Burn10. So BERN 10. I suppose to go out the R, and we have Ben 10.
Ben 10.
Kids program that.
All right. Okay. I wasn't getting it. I was there going, man, what the hell was I talking about?
Yeah. Burn 10. And it's on the format hightech.com website. But it just, like, they come on the trips if they have the stuff, and I do try to emphasize it, you know, it's in my tour descriptions all the time about, you know, about stuff. But, you know, some people are afraid to commit to money, you know, or not commit to money, but commit to that level of investment.
But Bernard, like, you pay for what you get. Like, it's the same as a tripod. It's the same as a camera. Like, if you buy a 200 euro camera, you're not going to get the same results that you pay a 3000 camera like a Sony A7R Mark III. You know, it's common knowledge, really. You know, it's the same with filters, the same with tripods. So people need to understand these things and don't expect everything from nothing.
And, you know, I think they do. Personally, like, what I've been doing this a year and a half. It's was almost 2 years now, and it's over time I can see that, like, I'm very, very lucky to have a lot of repeat customers, but I can see how they've evolved over the last, you know, year and a half, how they've improved. But also, you know what, they've kind of come to the realization, you know, I want to take things to the next level. You know, I want to shoot more, I want to get out more, I want to invest in the filters, because, like, you can get nice filter kits. Format High Tech do amazing filter kits where you get a nice combo of stuff, grad filter, ND, polarizer, hauler, and all the filter rings you need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's it's a really good start. But they come on and they use your, you know, they use one of your spare tripods, or they use one of your spare filters. But not only that, you see, I suppose, like, you're not going to buy something if you don't know how to use it, or you don't really know what it's for. And yeah, people know what a grad filter is, they know how to polarize it, but they might not understand how it works, how it's supposed to work. So it's kind of hard to convince people, especially beginners, to invest, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500 euros on these, you know, this equipment.
So, Bernard, talking about equipment now, and we've gone a small bit over time already, so, and I'd love to ask you more questions because you're very entertaining, but we're going to ask you one last question now, Bernard, since we're talking about technology and gear. We do this thing every week called the VSP, right? And it's a very solid product. You may have seen some of them before. Now, what would be your VSP? Now, I know I'm putting you on the spot here now, but what would be your VSP for a product that would be essential to a workshop going foreign or somewhere like that?
It's actually, you know what, something sticks out straight away, and it's something I actually came across about a month ago or so. It's actually, I'll tell you what it is, it's actually, now I know cameras and tripod heads come with levels, right? But what this is, it's actually a little level on kind of like a kind of a...
Your hot shoe.
No, it goes in the center pole of your tripod.
Okay.
So it's just a kind of an elastic level. So you put it around the center, under your tripod, the center column, you actually put it to it. But if you get the legs level with that, right? Now again, like, I know people are like, but sure, my tripod already has that level or this and that, but not all tripods do. But this thing, it's real hard to explain what it's like, but it's a Manfrotto product. And it just basically straps around the center column of your tripod, right? Underneath the ball head. And once you get that level and your legs level, and then the level on your camera's level, in portrait mode or whatever, it's actually like 100% for panoramas. Now, I actually don't do a lot of panoramas, but the times I have used it, it's been literally perfectly level all the way around. Now, again, I say, people will say, but sure, my legs have this and my legs have that, or my ball head has the level to do that. Not everyone does, but as long as you have a center column and you have this, you can only like about 15 euros. So it's just a thing, and you can leave it on your ball head or on your center column all the time. So it's just, it's such for the price and for...
That's awesome.
You know?
That's very impressive now, Bernard. I really like the idea of that, because me personally, I just went away and bought a new ball head for my own tripod, because the panoramics are the type of landscape picture which I haven't done in at least about 4 years. So it's something that I don't know why, I just got the urge to do it again. So I went away and bought a brand new Manfrotto ball head. I got L brackets and everything for it. So I look forward to shooting with that. So with that product, Bernard, you might send me on a link to that, and I'll put it up on the Facebook group for all our listeners to see, and maybe buy it themselves, like, you know. John, have you any last questions for Bernard?
No, Bernard, I hope you enjoy yourself now over the next few days. When did you say you're back?
Back Sunday night.
Back Sunday night. Cool. So it's the Fairy Pools tomorrow, is that what you said?
Fairy Pools tomorrow, and sunset looks good tomorrow night, so dependent on cloud cover, if we kind of have potential for kind of moody lit up clouds, we'll head to Elgol. And if it's looking like, because it could be 50-50, it looks 50-50 for a nice clearance out in the horizon, but potential for cloud overhead, it's either between Elgol or Neese Point Lighthouse. I don't really like the plan. Okay. You know, I'll take it as the day goes on and suss out the conditions. If it's clear, we'll go for side light at Neese Point. And if not, we'll go for a bit of mood and colour at Elgol, hopefully.
Quick question before I forget. Have you ever shot the night sky in Sky?
I have. I've actually got the Aurora once or twice as well.
Because I heard a lot of stories about the midgets.
Yeah, that's why I don't come in.
Yeah. It's bad, is it?
This is actually the kind of earliest of summer I've ever come over, really. And it looks like it's going to be breezy enough for the few days, so I can't imagine we'll experience any midges. But
yeah, good.
Yeah, if anybody wants to... If anyone's thinking of coming to the Isle of Skye and they think they might come in the summer, just get onto YouTube and Google the 1 minute midge challenge on Skye, and that will tell you.
Thank you. Absolutely. Very good. No thanks. Bernard, that has been absolutely fantastic. I hope, and I know our listeners will be ecstatic by listening to this interview, because you've gave us all so much knowledge about what you do and how you do it. So guys, thank you very much for listening. And don't forget, we are on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and now we're on Spotify. So please leave a rating if you can, guys. It would really mean a lot to all of us. Bernard, thanks very much for coming on. John, thanks a million for coming on.
Thanks,
also.
Guys.
And we look forward to talking in the future again soon, guys.
See you, lads.
Thanks, guys.
Chat again. Bye-bye.
If you've enjoyed the Irish Photography Podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, guys, keep shooting.